Good morning, everyone. This is Pete Braden and Mark Verdi with Godseen Gibb. We will start our year-end tax update call in just a minute. We're going to let a few people sign on here. So we'll start in just a moment. Thank you. Okay, great. I think that we'll go ahead and get started. Thanks, everyone, for joining us for our annual year-end tax update call. My name is Pete Braden. I'm with Godseen Gibb, and Mark Verdi is joining me here. I'm going to make a quick introduction for Mark, but before I do that, I do want to mention there is a chat feature on the bottom of your screen. Any questions that you send us will only be seen by us at Godseen Gibb. None of the other participants in the call will see those. We're not going to have time to address those questions during this call, but they will be addressed as part of the transcript that will be available after the call. If your question is specific to your situation, Mark and his team will reach out directly and answer your question that way. So we'll be sure to get any questions addressed that might result from this call. But with that, my job is to introduce Mark Verdi, someone who really doesn't need an introduction. That's, I think, why everybody felt comfortable allowing me to do this. But Mark has done this call for the last several years, and I think a lot of folks have found it very, very helpful. It's amazing that we're addressing year-end issues already. It's incredible that that time has come, but here we are. So quickly, Mark is our Director of Tax and Financial Planning. He's been with the firm for over 10 years. He has over 25 years of tax and accounting experience. He earned his master's and his undergraduate degree in accounting from the University of Virginia. So he's a proud Wahoo and is happy to be segueing from the football season into the basketball season. So things are definitely looking up for Mark. Mark is a Richmond native. He has two teenage sons who keep him busy and keep him humble. Mark, that doesn't probably leave a whole lot for other activities, but Mark does like to drive his motorcycle around, and he can be seen tooling around Richmond and the roads, back roads are outside of Richmond when he's not here at the offices. So with that, Mark, I'm going to turn it over to you. Take it away.
Great. Thanks, Pete. I really appreciate that. And I've been instructed by the powers that be here at the firm to not ride my motorcycle during tax season. So, but that doesn't necessarily deter me. But thank you, everyone, for joining us today. As Pete mentioned, we have done this call the last couple of years, and I think clients find it helpful. Hopefully, you are able to get some good information from this call today. We'll spend about 45 minutes together this morning. And if you've had a chance to peruse the slides prior to the call from the invitation link, you know, there's a lot of information here. And I apologize in advance if I go through it relatively quickly. I wanted to provide as much information as possible as it relates to the tax laws that could impact the largest majority of our clients. And as Pete mentioned, if you have any questions, certainly include them in the chat, and we will touch base on those after the call. Be available online along with a replay link to this call and a transcript in the coming weeks. And we will also have a document compiling all of the questions and answers. If it's something that is more general in nature, if it's more personal, and you would like for us to address that directly with you, then certainly I will be willing to reach out to you, and either myself or someone on our team will address your individual question, as well as any tax other tax questions or your situation that we may want to discuss at that time. With that, we'll go ahead and get started. I've shared my screen here, and I will move forward. In here, we've talked a little bit about myself. I just want to touch base about our tax and financial planning team. We have a group of CPAs and CFP professionals here who provide comprehensive financial planning services, tax return preparation, tax planning, and consulting. So whether it is an annual tax return or a full comprehensive financial plan or just an ad hoc question that you may have for us, we're always open to speaking with our clients about your tax situation or your financial planning questions that you have. We pretty much work exclusively with the wealth management clients who engage us to perform these services. So that is helpful for us as CPAs to have that captive audience, if you will, and that rapport with our clients along with the wealth management advisors. So we work closely with your advisors like Pete Braden and the others in our firm to provide the best solutions for you related to your taxes and financial planning. While I'll be sharing these slides with you, I will also try to keep in mind that there are some folks who may have just joined by phone, and I'll try to remember to acknowledge that I moved on to the next slide, and you may be following along on the PDF that was part of the invitation link. In terms of an agenda on this next slide, I'll be touching on the various provisions of individual income tax acts that have been enacted over the last, say, 6+ years, and including the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that went into effect back in 2018 and is set to expire at the end of 2025. And that contains most of the provisions that will affect pretty much all of us who have tax returns prepared, as well as the SECURE Act, the SECURE 2.0, Inflation Reduction Act. There have been a lot of tax laws enacted over the last few years. And so we'll touch on some of those, as well as sharing some tax planning strategies that will pull those various tax act provisions together to help you minimize your 2023 tax liability. And really also looking ahead to 2024, we typically encourage clients to take a multi-year approach when it comes to trying to plan for what your tax liability will be. And then I will touch also on briefly on estate and trust income tax, as well as gift taxes, since a lot of our clients have trusts and may have taxable estates or do some gifting to beneficiaries. So we'll touch on some of those provisions, some of which will overlap with the strategies and provisions on the individual income tax side. And then finally, there'll be a brief summary at the end. And again, we'll take questions offline. We're happy to answer those post the call. On the next couple of slides here, we'll get into the individual income tax. Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, or TCJA, again, effective through 2025. That lowered individual tax rates mostly across the board. The preferential qualified dividends and long-term capital gains tax rates remained at 0, 15%, and 20%. And then there was the 20% QBI deduction, or qualified business income deduction, for certain self-employed individuals who have pass-through activities, for example, to help take advantage of the TCJA's reduction in the corporate tax rate, and then being able to benefit from that as a self-employed individual. The next couple of slides, we have the ordinary income tax rates, taxable income rates for single individuals, depending on your filing status, married, filing jointly, et cetera. And these are taxable income numbers. So if you feel, for example, your income is $100,000, so you're married, filing jointly, and you fall within the 22% marginal tax bracket, meaning the highest bracket within these progressive tax rates, with your standard, even just the standard deduction being close to $30,000, rounding that, of course, you would actually be more in the 12% bracket because your taxable income would be $70,000, just as an example. Long-term capital gains tax rates, again, the amounts on there, the taxable income ranges that are applicable to the 0, 15%, 20% brackets are on the slide that's included in the package here. The next slide, we get into the standard deductions. Those, as many of you know, were doubled with this TCJA. And so more often than not, there are folks taking the standard deduction these days, although it still can be worthwhile to accumulate your itemized deductions and see if your total of itemized deductions, which we'll explain a little bit more about what's eligible and allowable in the next couple of slides, and if that exceeds the standard deduction, going ahead taking your itemized deductions to get that additional tax benefit. The next slide here, the allowable itemized deductions. The biggest ones here are the second bullet point, tax state and local tax deduction limited to $10,000. That was a big deal because prior to the act, a lot of higher taxed states had provided a larger benefit. Many of our clients incur more than $10,000 of state and local taxes, but you're limited to $10,000 as a deduction on your return. And then the last bullet point there, the no miscellaneous itemized deductions, your tax prep fees, investment management fees, and unreimbursed employee expenses are no longer deductible. And that's something we revisit each year. That was a valuable deduction, even though most of that was subject to 2% of AGI, or adjusted gross income. You'll hear that a lot throughout the presentation. Essentially, that's your total income before your deductions. AGI, it was subject to a 2% AGI limitation, but now that's not available at all. And then there's the medical expenses are also deductible, subject to the 7.5% of AGI. On the next slide, next couple of slides, actually, the net investment income tax. This is essentially a surtax on your net investment income, which includes looking at your taxable interest, your dividends, capital gains, real estate, you know, rents, royalties. If you have some business entities or passive activities that you are receiving income for, that is all included in your net investment income. And if your AGI or modified AGI, as you'll see on the screen there, exceeds a certain amount, then you may be subject to this surtax. And this is actually not part of the TCJA. This has actually been in effect since January of 2013. So 2023 is actually the 11th year that this has been around. And I was actually surprised that when I had seen, I remember was reminded of that date of being enacted, because the time just flies. But the next slide here has a calculation. Again, it's limited to the lesser of your net investment income or the amount by which this income exceeds a threshold. So for example, on the left there, you see the single filing status. Your MAGI is $250,000. So that's $50,000 over the $200,000 threshold if you're married, if you're filing single. Your net investment income is $75,000, but it's the lesser of. So you're taxed at 3.8% of $50,000. And this is something that we coin as a tax trigger, if you will, something that incurs additional taxes or additional costs unexpectedly, simply because you're in a certain level of income. And so you want to keep this in mind if you're pushing up against these income levels due to your other income sources, such as your required minimum distributions or RMDs, Social Security, realized capital gains in a particular year could impact this as well. So it's important to revisit what your projected taxable income will be for the year. And if you're planning on realizing additional capital gains or harvesting any capital losses, for example, then keeping this net investment income tax in mind is important, because you may think you're being taxed at 15%, let's say, on your capital gains. But if you're subject to this tax, then you're looking at an 18.8% tax on some of that income. On the next slide, the SECURE Act. This was passed kind of the beginning of a slew of acts that became effective just before COVID. But then, of course, as COVID came upon us in 2020, there's been additional acts since then that we'll get into. This was in 2019, really effective 2020. A couple of the big items here was that there's no age limit on contributing to your IRA as long as you're still working. It used to be that at age 70 and a half, you had a cutoff on contributing to your IRA. But now, before RMDs, which is now, well, it was 72, as you can see here on the slide for the SECURE Act, and it has been raised to age 73 with SECURE 2.0, which we'll get into in a moment. But you're able to still contribute to your IRA after age 70 and a half, as long as you're still working. And then the stretch IRA distributions. This was another important limitation that was enacted with the SECURE Act. And before the SECURE Act, you were able to stretch out an inherited IRA distribution if you were a beneficiary of an IRA. Let's say you were a 50-year-old child and your mom or your dad passed away and you inherited the IRA, you may be able to take distributions over your life expectancy according to the IRS tables. And so that could be 30, 34, 35 years. And now that's restricted to a 10-year period. So that is significant for some folks, and that's what we call the 10-year rule. And now on the next slide, there were some proposed regulations around this, because there was a lot of confusion, or I guess different interpretations of the SECURE Act provisions related to this 10-year rule. Some CPAs and tax preparers felt that the taxpayers were required to take these distributions annually over the 10-year period so that it was liquidated fully at the end of year 10. And then other CPAs interpreted it to say that annual distributions were not required as long as the beneficiary of that inherited IRA fully liquidated it by the end of year 10. And in an attempt to clarify this law, in February of 2022, they issued proposed regulations stating that if you were a non-spouse beneficiary, you had to take distributions annually over the 10-year period. Now, this amount was not spelled out in the regulations, but one common strategy would be to take distributions ratably over the 10-year period. So 1/10 of the value of the account the first year, 1/9 the next year, 1/8, and so on. The IRS also issued additional guidance in November of 2022, as well as in July of 2023, to state that if the inherited IRA beneficiaries had not adhered to this 10-year rule and taken the distributions annually, there will not be a penalty. And as of the date of this call, the proposed regulations have not been finalized or signed into law. So there's still flexibility in not taking the distributions annually and not being penalized on that. Now, it may make sense to go ahead and take those distributions each year, and having the income from taxable income from those distributions smoothed over a 10-year period versus deferring until year 10 and having to take a lump sum. But that would be something to discuss with your CPA or with us if we work with you on that, as well as your wealth management advisor to discuss your situation to see what makes sense in any given year. On this next slide, at the end of December 2022, the Secure 2.0 Act was enacted. And this was a law that passed after our 2022 tax call last year in November. So this is some new tax call information, but you've probably heard or read about some of this elsewhere. Many of these provisions were enacted to improve retirement saving opportunities and to help employers set up lower cost retirement plans. And this also included automatic 401k plan enrollment and increased the RMD age. And many of these provisions are effective January 1, 2023, and some of them are applicable in future years. On the next page or slide, the new RMD rules under the Secure Act, it was age 72, as I mentioned before. Now it's been increased to age 73, beginning January 1st, 2023, and it will raise even further to age 75 in 2033. And it also, the Secure Act also reduced the excise tax penalty for failing to take these RMDs. It used to be that if you did not take the RMD, you were penalized 50% of what that RMD amount was supposed to be distributed, and you would pay that as part of your tax return liability. And that's been reduced to 25% of the RMD amount. And if this failure is corrected in a timely manner, and that's defined in the act, the excise tax is reduced to 10%. On the next slide, the Secure 2.0 Act also effectively increased retirement plan catch-up contributions for those who are age 50 and older. It's by tying these to inflation each year versus having the catch-up contributions be static, if you will, and until the IRS approved an increase in those catch-up contributions. And the annual catch-up contribution limit for most retirement plans is $7,500. And again, that's going to be subject to inflation increases. And because the IRS likes to add some complexity to things, in 2025, the Secure 2.0 provides for an increased catch-up contribution limit for folks that are between the ages of 60 and 63. And you can see on the slide there, the greater of $10,000 or 150% of the catch-up contribution limit for 2024. Now on the next slide, also part of Secure 2.0, they initially enacted a rule that starting in 2024, these increased contributions must be Roth contributions. In other words, they had to be after-tax and not pre-tax dollars if your income was over $145,000, and that income amount would be indexed annually for inflation. However, in August of 2023, the IRS issued guidance that delays this Roth contribution mandate to 2026 because plan sponsors and custodians, CPAs, lobbied that more time is needed to amend plan documents, to update systems, to track these requirements, and so on. And I think it's interesting that, I think a two-year delay is good. I think it's interesting that it will also coincide with when the TCJA expires. So we'll see and keep you up to date on whether any of these changes are enacted as projected here as we get closer to those expiration dates. On the next slide, the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. This was signed into law in August of last year, 2022, so we touched on it during last year's call. The main objectives there were to lower prescription drug costs, address climate change, increase taxes paid by corporations and the, quote, ultra wealthy. And so there was a lot of criticism about this act because of its misnomer, if you will. And not to get too political about it, it's just there were a lot of things in this that weren't related to reducing inflation. But there were a lot of income tax provisions that were enacted that are in effect for
2023 and beyond. So we want to touch on those clean energy credits. On the next slide, the energy efficient home improvement credit. This was extended through 2032. Each one of these credits received new names and new extension periods. And starting in 2023, this credit is equal to 30% of the cost of installing certain energy efficient home improvements. And that includes the equipment, materials, labor, including that cost for an annual maximum of $1,200. You can see other limits there on the screen for exterior doors, windows, and skylights. And this is also an annual maximum, not a lifetime credit. The previous credits related to these types of expenditures had a maximum of, say, for example, the exterior windows and skylights of $600. And that was a lifetime credit. Once you reach that maximum credit of $600 on your tax return, then you were no longer eligible for it. This is an annual maximum. So there may be multiple years that you incur these costs and make these installations and are able to take that $1,200 credit. And then on the next slide, there's also up to annual maximum of $2,000 of available credit for natural gas heat pumps and water heaters and other what they call biomass equipment. And again, that's an annual maximum. On the next slide here, the residential clean energy property credit. Again, this was extended through 2024. This also provides a 30% credit to the cost of installation for qualifying solar powered property. Think your solar panels, solar water heaters, etc. And there's no overall dollar amount limit to this credit. So this could be an extremely valuable credit for, because it is dollar for dollar against your tax liability. On the next slide here, we have the clean vehicle credit. And this is extended through 2032. And this also creates new credits for previously owned electric vehicles, clean vehicles, as well as commercial vehicles. In the past, it was really just for personal new vehicles. And this is for vehicles purchased after 12/31/2022. So again, essentially 2023 and beyond. $7,500 for new vehicles, $40,000 for certain qualifying commercial vehicles. And then you see there for previously owned clean vehicles up to $4,000. And there are several limitations that apply in terms of the type of vehicle, when it was built, your income. And so you want to check the fine print as it relates to the whether your vehicle is eligible. I think there's also an opportunity for the dealer to provide supporting documentation whether a vehicle is eligible for these credits. And I believe there's actually going to be, if there isn't already, there's a database within the IRS to look up a vehicle identification number, your VIN, to see if it applies for the credit. So now we'll get into several tax planning strategies for 2023 to help reduce your 2023 tax liability. The next slide, current tax law strategy considerations. You want to consider maximizing your retirement plan and IRA contributions if you're still working, including your SEP IRAs if you're self-employed. And the elective deferral information and contribution limits are here on the slide. And we've projected 2024 amounts adjusted for inflation, which the IRS should be officially releasing any day now. These are widely published projections. They're just not official at this time, but I think they'll be, you know, meaningfully reasonable to make some plans for 2024 at this point. If you're in your near peak or in your peak earning years and you're in a higher tax bracket now than you expect to be in retirement, then maximizing these pre-tax deferrals today will help save in taxes because you'll make taxable distributions when you're retired and presumably with a lower taxable income and a lower tax bracket. And also keep in mind that if you're married and you can contribute to your spouse's IRA, even if your spouse is not working and does not have earned income, as long as your earnings are at least more than what the combined IRA contributions would be in a given year, you're able to contribute to both. On the next slide, Roth IRA conversions and traditional IRA distributions, pre-RMDs or the inherited RMDs, as we mentioned earlier, the 10-year rule, maybe taking distributions before you have to, maybe tax efficient under the current tax rates. Again, they're set to expire at the end of 2025, and you may be able to take advantage of those lower tax rates now, but you also want to keep in mind some other considerations that are listed there on the slide, you know, your cash flow, how much you're going to need for living expenses, your other income and your other deductions, other available assets and income sources, et cetera. So I would discuss your individual situation with your CPA, tax professional to help determine what would be the most beneficial course of action for you. On the next slide, long-term capital gains, realizing those long-term cap gains at the 0%, 15% rate, depending on your overall income amount, could be beneficial. Again, not sure what those rates are going to change to after 2025 in tax year 2026. And here at Godsey & Gibb, we, in the tax and financial planning group, work closely with your wealth management advisor to determine whether it makes sense to take more long-term gains or perhaps harvest some losses where appropriate, as long as it fits within your overall portfolio management objective. We don't want the tax implications to be the sole reason for investment management decisions, but we do take taxes into account as part of the decision-making process. Also on this slide, we touch on deductions, itemized deductions versus standard deductions. As I mentioned earlier, standard deduction is more prevalent because of the amount of the deduction that's available now, but it may make sense to consider itemizing, as particularly if you're able to accelerate and quote unquote bunch some certain deductions in alternating years. For example, one strategy we mentioned on here is bunching your charitable contributions. And maybe you give a significant amount of money to your church or your synagogue or university or other favorite charity, for example, in 2023, and then take the standard deduction in 2024 and then contribute a significant amount again in 2025, something along those lines. And that allows you to meet your philanthropic goals, but also receive the benefit of those higher charitable contributions in excess of the standard deduction, and then taking the standard deduction in alternate years. Also, donating appreciated stock, either directly to the charity or through a donor advised fund, is another effective way to provide significant charitable contributions in a given year and contribution deductions for the fair market value of the stock on the date of the contribution, especially if you have low basis stock. And instead of realizing a capital gain by selling the stock to raise cash and donating the cash to charity, donate the stock directly to the charity, obtain a tax deduction for that fair market value of the stock on the date of the contribution, and avoid capital gains taxes. On the next slide, we talk about medical expenses. Again, this is an opportunity to bunch medical expenses into alternate years when it's possible. We talked earlier about that 7.5% of AGI hurdle that must be cleared before deducting any medical expenses. So for example, if your adjusted gross income is $100,000 and you have $7,501 of medical expenses, only $1 is deductible. So to the extent that you can bunch more of your medical expenses in alternating years, that will be beneficial to you. Now, obviously, that's not always easy to do and forecast, but if you happen to have an elective surgery, for example, or you're considering moving into an assisted living or independent living facility that may have significant entrance fees, a portion of which could be deductible as medical expenses, then you'll want to time those types of expenses within a given year to hopefully take advantage of the deduction and then take standard deduction in other years. Also, you could use your health savings account or HSA to indirectly deduct medical expenses by contributing to your health savings account, getting a deduction for that, and then making withdrawals from your HSA, which would be tax-free if you're using those for qualified medical expenses. And the HSA contribution limits are on the screen, as well as the projected amounts for 2024. Again, not official yet, but I think they're reasonably close to what they will actually end up being. And then also evaluate your timing of transactions eligible for the tax credits. Any of those clean energy credits that are available in 2023, they may provide the most benefit based on your income this year, but they are available over multiple years. So if you feel that your income is going to be higher in 2024, for example, deferring that expense to the next year and getting that credit against your 2024 income could be beneficial to you. On the next slide, qualified charitable distributions. These are what we call QCDs. Taking these from your IRA is also a great way to meet your charitable goals without incurring any taxes. You must be 70 and a half or older on the date the QCD is made, and the funds must go directly to the charity for this to apply. Now, if the custodian writes a check made out to your favorite charity and you'd like to deliver it to them yourself, and that would also work. You just want to avoid having a check made out to you or funds transferred to you directly from your IRA and then making a contribution, because that would simply be a taxable distribution to you and then a deductible contribution on your taxes. This, you would want to go directly to the charity, and you can direct up to $100,000 per year to your favorite charity, and this would also be counted towards your RMD. So you would be able to reduce your RMD by this amount. And this is also helpful as it relates to AGI. As I mentioned several times, the lower your AGI, the better for this purpose in terms of those hurdles like the medical expenses and the net investment income tax, those types of tax triggers that you would want to avoid. Even Medicare premiums could be increased because of your amount of your adjusted gross income. And you, being able to make QCDs not only achieves the charitable goals, but allows you to reduce AGI as well. And I will mention also, though, that the onus is on you, the taxpayer, to let your tax preparer know that you have made these QCDs, because of the 1099 you receive at the end of the year will have the total amount of your distributions. And you have to let us know, or your, or another tax preparer, hey, I made a gift, a QCD of $10,000, for example, to my favorite charity. So please reduce my income by that amount. And by the way, many of our monthly newsletter Q&A articles address some of these topics. We've talked about QCDs, bunching, donor advised funds, etc. And those are available on our website, godsyngive.com. Click on education and you'll see on our homepage, and you'll see some of the articles there. So I encourage you to peruse those if you haven't seen those already. Finally, investment management fees on this slide at the bottom. Go ahead and pay those IRA management fees directly from your IRA. It used to be in the past that we would recommend getting your asset management fees paid from your taxable account, because then you were able to deduct those on your taxes as a miscellaneous itemized deduction. And since that is no longer available to you, we recommend just paying those IRA management fees directly from the IRA versus a taxable account. Now, you cannot pay other account management fees from your IRA, just the fees that are related to this IRA. And then finally, on the next slide, check in with your CPA or tax preparer. You want to discuss your expected income and deductions with your tax preparer. And this is primarily related to your withholdings and quarterly estimated tax payments, and determine whether you should pay in anything additional between now and the end of the year by either adjusting your withholding from your IRA distributions or making a quarterly estimated tax payment in the fourth quarter of this year. Conversely, if you have front-loaded, so to speak, your withholdings and your quarterly estimated payments during the first three quarters of the year based on projected income earlier, and now your income is looking like it's going to be less this year than you had expected, you may be able to avoid making a fourth quarter payment. So you would want to meet with your tax preparer to discuss what the rest of this year looks like and make sure you're on track to have your estimated tax liability covered, so you're not getting some undue surprises at tax time. Also, it is a good time to adjust your payroll withholding if you're still working, to make sure that you're sufficiently paid in for 2023 and have a good start to 2024. Job changes, salary changes, you know, changes in marital status, having children, moving to different states, all of those have tax consequences, and it would make sense to review your withholdings and make sure that they are sufficient to cover your tax liability. And on the slide, I included a link to the IRS withholding estimator tool. I think it's a valuable tool to walk through to make sure that you're on track for your withholdings. But you can also Google IRS withholding estimator, and a link will be provided in the search results as well. On the next couple of slides here, we're going to shift to the estate and trust and gift tax area. And the next slide, the estate and trust tax law overview, you see the tax rates for estates and trusts, very similar to individuals, top tax rate being 37%. Just want to keep in mind that these brackets are much more compressed. So even though the tax rates are similar to individuals, even the qualified dividends and long-term capital gains rates, they are incurred at a much lower income level. And you can see they are just under $15,000, along with the net investment income tax, that 3.8% surtax. Estates and trust income taxes are also subject to that tax as well. So One planning strategy could be to determine whether a trust beneficiary would need a distribution for living expenses from the trust in 2023 or even in 2024, really any particular year, and time those income distributions so that the tax liability shifts to the beneficiary at a potentially lower tax rate, obviously depending on the beneficiary's tax situation. But most often we've seen with that, because the income brackets are so much wider for an individual, there may be the opportunity to shift some of that income tax liability from the trust to the beneficiary. And of course, provided those distributions are in accordance with the trust document. On the next slide, the biggest estate and gift change that occurred with the TCJA was the doubling of the estate and gift lifetime exemption amount. And this has been indexed for inflation each year. And in 2023, it's just under $13 million for an individual taxpayer. And if you're looking at a married couple and combining those exemption amounts, almost $26 million. And I have the projections on there as well for 2024. And the estate tax rate is 40%. The annual gift tax exclusion annual amount is $17,000 for 2023. And on this, you'll see on this next slide, take advantage of the annual gift exclusion. It's also $34,000 if the gift is split between spouses to reduce your taxable estate. And those amounts are projected to be $18,000 and $36,000 per year if you split the gifts. And gifting is still really important, especially if the old exclusion amounts are reinstated in 2026. There are some projections that say it'll be around $6 million or $7 million versus the $13 million where it is today. And so gifting annually is still a strong estate planning tool. One popular strategy that folks have used is with 529 plans, you're able to gift up to $85,000 in a given year. Essentially, you're able to elect a five-year average. Let's say that this has been made over a five-year period, but you're gifting it all in 1 year. You file a gift tax return electing this five-year average election, and it will not count against the annual gift tax exclusion, and it won't reduce your overall lifetime exclusion amount. And also consider setting up and funding irrevocable trusts, which will remove assets from your estate. But you want to keep in mind that your heirs will receive a step up in basis if they inherited the assets versus gifting them directly during your lifetime or gifting them to an irrevocable trust. And this could be valuable for folks that have low cost basis in stocks or other assets. If you hold on to those versus gifting them now, they could potentially save your heirs significant capital gains taxes because they wouldn't be able to utilize the stepped up basis to the fair market value on the date of your passing versus the low cost basis. On the next slide, consider deceased spouse's unused exemption amount. This is referring to the portability of that amount, the $12.92 million, meaning that it can be added to the surviving spouse's estate lifetime exemption amount, giving the surviving spouse an exemption of almost $26 million in 2023. And again, this will be adjusted for inflation in future years. And I know it can be a difficult conversation to have, but addressing the potential estate tax impact of a deceased spouse's estate is very important and extremely valuable. We've consulted with clients on this who have had a family member pass away, and there may not be a taxable estate consideration given this $13 million unused exemption amount, but if the unused exemption amount reverts back to $6 million, let's say, you could be subject to a taxable estate. So being able to port this unused exemption amount over to the surviving spouse could be a very valuable strategy. An important thing to keep in mind, though, is that the executor must file a 706 estate tax return to elect this portability in order for that unused exemption amount to be transferred over to the surviving spouse. And finally, on the next slide, I cannot emphasize enough to revisit your estate planning documents, your wills, your trusts, powers of attorney, medical directives with your estate attorney to ensure that they accurately reflect your intentions. Over the years with these tax laws that have been enacted, you may have had some provisions that had certain distributions to certain individuals in certain amounts. Maybe you had a marital trust and a family trust, for example. And now that these state law provisions have been enacted, there may be changes in the amounts or the beneficiaries of said amounts that weren't your intentions. So it makes sense to review these with your state attorney to make sure that they are updated for the current tax laws and so that they are distributing your assets as you intend upon your death. And also, if you've moved states, it's important to get your documents updated. If you've moved from Michigan to South Carolina, for example, you want to make sure that these estate documents are updated for your new state of domicile. And with that, we'll get into a brief summary, and we're coming up on the end of our time together. I'll just briefly walk through these. Roth IRA conversions and traditional IRA distributions may be more tax efficient under the current tax bracket structure, again, set to expire at the end of 2025. So it may make sense to accelerate some of these distributions and be taxed at lower rates. But of course, you know, we can address your individual situation. While working in your peak earning years, maximizing your pre-tax retirement plan contributions and IRA contributions, realizing long-term capital gains, being taxed at lower rates, but also be aware of other income and net investment income tax being a tax trigger that you would could possibly be subject to, as well as the impact on Medicare premiums. Again, if your adjusted gross income is over a certain amount, the Social Security Administration looks annually at your tax returns to see what that amount is, and you may pay more in Medicare premiums. So you want to be aware of that as well. Itemizing your deductions may still be very valuable depending on the amounts and the timing, particularly if you're able to bunch some of those amounts together for medical expenses and charitable contributions, for example. And consider the clean energy credits enacted and the timing of those purchases to get the most benefit out of the credits. It may be something you could benefit from in 2023 if you want to go buy that Tesla for Christmas, but you may want to wait till next year if your income is going to be higher. And also consider various gifting strategies to charity and maximize the tax benefit there. On the next slide, consider various charitable gifting strategies, the appreciated stock, the QCDs, etc. Review your 2023 tax withholding and your quarterly estimated tax payment amounts and then get those adjusted if necessary. And finally, estate planning is critical. Consider creating irrevocable trusts if that makes sense for your situation, gifting to heirs each year, electing portability of a deceased spouse's unused exemption amount to tack that on to the surviving spouse's exemption amount to help minimize the possibility of a taxable estate, and review your existing estate and trust documents to reflect current law and to accurately achieve your intentions upon your passing. Now, I know that was a lot of information in a short amount of time, as I have on the slide here. Any questions? Again, there was the chat feature. If any questions have come through, I'm going to actually go ahead and share my video again now. Went into the slides, and if you have any questions, you can certainly email me directly. My email address is on this slide here, but we will get to those questions, and certainly reach out to your wealth management advisor, to us, and anyone on our tax and financial planning team if you ever have any questions or would like to work with us related to your tax return preparation or financial plans. And I really thank you for your time and attention today. I hope you gathered some good information. Hope some of it's helpful to you. And again, there will be the document with the questions compiled that will be put online here in the next week or two or so, along with the transcript of the call and the replay. And so those will be available on the website. And I hope you have a great day. Thank you for taking the time to spend with us this morning. I look forward to speaking to you again and hopefully seeing some of you in the near future. Take care.